to Global Media News from the New Media Newsroom on OWWR, Old Westbury Web Radio.
This week in New Media News,
how are social influencers helping us shop on Instagram?
Fans are celebrating Meek Mill's release from prison on social media.
How did Starbucks handle the social media backlash after their racial fiasco in Philly?
DJ Avicii is dead. How are fans and celebrities using social media to share their grief?
Everybody is talking about blockchain. What is a blockchain?
How are indie wrestlers creating social storylines to engage their fans?
What's new about new media art? And how is Facebook Messenger using augmented reality to sell? Social influencers are all the rage in social media marketing. Brands are partnering with social influencers with large followings to promote products and create relationships with consumers. Kristen Schmeling is with us today to talk about some of the popular social influencers on Instagram and how they are shaping the way we shop. Kristen, what drew you to this topic? Do you follow any influencers on Instagram?
I do follow a lot of celebrities on Instagram. Surprisingly, like, all the celebrities pretty much have come influencers. But it drew me to this topic because I know you did it last week.
Yes.
But I found, like, some more information on it, so I kind of, like, just, I don't know, like, I just kind of dove in. So, according to a new study on Resale Dive, about 55% of consumers have purchased on social media platforms such as Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. But 60% of consumers have never bought items that were influenced by celebrities or bloggers. 66% of people admitted that they browse online first on websites like Google, Amazon, and then social media sites usually promote what they're looking for. Websites like Amazon do thrive on, like, Prime and, like, their whole two-day shipping. Social media influencers promoting different products can be held accountable as subconscious marketing. In the past few months, influencer marketing has skyrocketed in Google searches by 325%. Everyone wants to be a social media influencer these days. Marketing companies usually do have separate budgets for influencer marketing, and they receive about $7.65 on every dollar they spend on influencers. Back in February, Nike's Air Jordan Tinker model held a pre-release on Snapchat, and it became the first shoe that was sold from the app. The shoe sold out within 23 minutes. Ironic. There is also going to be ads for different products everywhere we look. On different street signs, the internet, etc. It's not a surprise that people buy from the internet from this reason. Websites do track everything you do, and that outfit you were looking for will come back up on Facebook when you've left the website. It's easier for most to just scroll on social media, and it'll lead consumers to shop online.
Yeah, so what are your opinions on website tracking?
I think it's pretty creepy. At least, like, if I'm, like, on, it's happened to me before, like, I'll be, like, on, like, Fashion Nova, for example, and I'll be, like, looking at, like, pants or something like that, and then, like, I'll go on Facebook because, like, I have a notification, and then it'll be, like, oh, do you want to buy those pants that you were looking for? And I just think, like, that's super weird.
It's, everyone's watching it. No matter what you do, people can see it. I know it's happened to me a couple of times, and I'm, like, how do you even know that I was looking at that? Just remember, the internet knows everything.
Yeah, like, even when you go on, like, the little private pages of, like, Google Chrome, like, they can still track you, like, if you're looking for flights or something. I always try to do that, like, look on Expedia or something. And then I'll try to go on, like, the private of Google Chrome because everyone's like, oh, that'll be cheaper that way. But then it's still, like, the same price.
It's just dangerous.
Yeah.
A big stalker.
Yeah. Pretty much.
So, is influencer marketing becoming more common? Are a lot of people getting into it?
Yeah, a lot of people are getting into it. I think it's a very easy way for people to make money, like, you know, talentless people like the Kardashians, sorry. They can just, you know, like, everyone looks up to them, they have all these followers on Instagram, whatever, and companies can just reach out to them and just be like, oh, here, you know, you want to try this, and just post it, and we'll pay you for this. Like, it's super easy these days, so anyone can pretty much do it.
Yeah, it's, like, kind of, not pathetic, but, like, at the same time, it's just, like, you're getting paid to do nothing, to try out something and then make people want it.
Exactly, like, you pretty much just, everyone probably just lies about whatever the situation is, whatever the product is.
Yeah.
And people will still buy it because of, you know, how many people have followed you on Instagram.
Yeah,
so, I mean,
whatever. It's a pretty ideal job. So, how do you feel about marketing and ads in general?
I mean, pretty pretty annoying. It's like they're literally everywhere you look. Like you're at the bus stop or something, you're in the city, or you know, you're trying to get a taxi or something. They're everywhere. We can't escape it, honestly. Like, we just live in consumerism, so it's always going to be around.
Yeah, I mean, I, like, get it. Everyone wants to promote their own brand, and you want to get your name out there, but there's a point where it's, like, so overwhelming, and it's, like, I can't just go somewhere and just, like, enjoy the scenery without there seeing a big billboard, and everyone shoving different products in my face, and I'm just, like, all right, let's just take a break, relax a little.
Exactly. Like, we live in that age where it's kind of just, like, ads everywhere, so.
Let's make money, so let's just put ads everywhere, and hopefully something will buy our product.
Yeah, exactly. So, Global Media News, I'm Kristen Schmalen. Back to you, Amanda.
Thank you, Kristen. Scarlett Vizcano-Perez is up next to talk about Meek Mill and the reaction on social media that followed his recent release from prison. Scarlett, how do you describe what happened on social media following Meek Mill's release?
So, on April 24th, 2018, that's when Meek Mill finally got released from prison. He's been in prison since November of 2017, so that was approximately like 5 months. He was there because he violated his probation. He was like misbehaving too much. After he was released, there was a big party on Twitter and Instagram. Fans were supporting him and showing love because he got released.
So what else can you tell us about Meek Mill? Do you know why he was on probation? Like, what exactly happened that led to him going to prison? I do remember this being like an ongoing thing where it was like back and forth with, was he going to go to prison? Was he going to get released? So is there a little bit more that you can tell us about it?
I think it was more of him, like, I guess, guns, drugs, you know.
So he
was conducting.
That's what got him on probation?
Yep. No, he was locked up before for 4 years, and then he got probation.
Okay, and then on his probation hearing, he got it.
Yes.
So what was he locked up for before that led to him having probation and then him violating his probation?
The same guns.
Okay.
I heard something about the reason that he violated probation or something like that because he was like doing a wheelie in the city or something like that.
Yeah.
That's why he like got arrested, which is bizarre because people do that all the time. Yeah, like on the cars, like on the
Okay, I mean, that's interesting.
Another thing was when he got released, he was released in a helicopter, and he even posted on Instagram that he thanks God, his family, friends, and just everybody for supporting him and showing him encouragement through the rough times. And he was there for 5 months, which is crazy. And he was actually supposed to be there for longer, 2 to 4 years, but they released him with bail.
Interesting.
Yeah.
For a wheelie.
Yeah. But, like, then at the same time, it's like you're thanking God and your friends and everybody, but you did it to yourself. Like, you put yourself in jail. It could have been released to avoid it. So, I mean, at the point, it's like you should better yourself and not thank everyone else.
Yeah.
But it's funny because on going through the timeline, you never see people, like, you know, bashing him because he was in jail. They were kind of, like, supporting him and thinking, God, that he's finally free. And they were just looking for, like, him to come back with the music.
Yeah.
And they want a new concert.
Yeah.
To support him.
Yeah, like, it's sort of like Beyonce and Jay-Z, like, in their song, like, Free Meek Mill. And I was just like, I mean, I'm not really a big fan of him because, you know, I like Drake, but after that whole thing, like, it was, yeah, he was canceled after that for me.
Everybody kind of forgot about that.
Yeah.
Kind of put, like, behind.
I honestly didn't even know it was a thing.
Yeah, it was a thing.
Yeah.
I mean,
Twitter fingers.
Yeah. I mean, it's like I said before, like, the power that celebrities have, even, like, being in jail, like that's the law, and yet they still have a way of weaseling themselves out of it. It's crazy.
Back to you, Amanda.
Thanks, Scarlett. Starbucks is facing a backlash on social media following the racially charged incident at a Starbucks in Philadelphia. What has been the role of social media in all of this?
Global Media News. I'm Kristen Schmalen.
Eli Pedway is here in Studio A with us to talk about Starbucks, social media, and race. Eli, give us a quick recap of what started all of this, and then tell us something about why social media is playing such an important role in the conversation.
Well, to explain what happened, two black men named Rashawn Nelson and Dante Robinson, who are 23-year-old entrepreneurs, and they're long-time friends as well. They went to meet a potential business partner at a Starbucks in Philadelphia's Rittenhouse Square neighborhood. Everything was going fine until the barista in the Starbucks asked them whether they wanted to order anything or not. The two men declined and told the barista that they were just there for a quick meeting. Nelson said that he then actually used the restroom, but they told him it was only for paying customers only. So the two men continued just to wait at the table for the business partner to arrive. Then they saw police officers enter the store and speak with the manager. Robinson recalled and said that his first thought was that they couldn't believe that they was there for them. He also mentioned how they had meetings at Starbucks all the time, so they didn't see it really coming. Nelson said that they wasn't really thinking about it until the police officers actually approached their table and told them that they needed to leave. He said they were just saying stuff like, get out, you have to leave, and you're not buying anything, so you shouldn't be here anyways.
Wow, it's very crazy, because I feel like people do this literally all the time.
Yeah.
People will sit in Starbucks.
Like, you have college students doing work. Like, it's a place where people go to, like, socialize and do business. Even when you're going on random interviews, like, people will be like, oh, do you want to meet at the closest Starbucks, and we'll talk about it then. So, to me, that's honestly, like, crazy.
I'm sure everybody has walked into a Starbucks and seen a couple of people on their laptops doing their work or just talking in the Starbucks. That's what it's usually used for now.
Yeah, like, it's
coffee, communicate, talk about things you want to talk about. That's usually what people go to Starbucks for.
Did the two men have anything to say about the situation?
Well, Nelson said that they called the total officers that they were there for a meeting, and Robinson said he even called the person that they were waiting for, but the officers didn't want to hear it at all. Robinson said that it was a real estate meeting that they'd been working on for months. He said they were days from changing their whole entire situation in their lives, and the officer eventually handcuffed both of them and escorted them out of the Starbucks into a squad car before even taking them to the police station. Both men were later freed 8 hours later, and the charge they were facing was trespassing and disturbance. They both were dropped the same night.
It's like, that was a waste of time. You don't know them, you don't know their background, and you're honestly just judging by the color of their skin. That's just something, the conclusion that so many people jump to right away. And it's just so sad, because we live in a world where it's like all about change, like, let's embrace everyone, and then you have things like this happen, so it's like,
nothing is even, like, being done to stop it.
No.
We have a great message. But anyway.
So, what were the effects that the social media backlash had? Like, how did people react to this on social media?
Well, it played a huge role, actually, because a woman by the name of Elizabeth Bingham, she's the one who posted the video of the accident actually happening, and the caption was, the police were called because these two men hadn't ordered anything. They're waiting for a friend to show up. Who did as they were taken out, and the handcuffs were doing nothing. All the other white people were wondering why it's never happened to us when we do the same thing as well. This video had over 11 million views with about 171,000 retweets and over 260,000 likes. When you watch the video, you can also see that the homeowners were very confused about what was happening. You can hear people in the background saying things like they didn't do anything. I saw the entire thing. What did they even get called for?
Yeah. It's like sad. Because they were just sitting there and then just boom like that.
Yeah, I did see that video. Like, a lot of people were trying to, like, help them, like, with the cops. But, like, the cops were just not.
Confusion. Like, they didn't do anything. No one did anything. And then you have people that, like, can get away with robberies. Even though it's totally different, but, like, still at the same time. And then I feel like police approach it in a different way. Then they approach this.
Another thing about the people started, protesting, actually. They started rallying outside the Philadelphia Starbucks. They had megaphones and huge signs, and a lot of people on social media was using the hashtag boycott Starbucks, and not for shame we use Starbucks. It ended up being so bad that Starbucks started feeling the heat, and so the CEO, his name is Kevin Johnson, he came out and addressed the whole situation and basically said how they started doing an investigation of their practices at the Starbucks. he said they would work with outside experts and community leaders to understand and adopt best practices. John T. also said that he would like to meet with the two men who were arrested personally for racist apology. He then added by saying that the store manager never intended for this man to be arrested. It's something that shouldn't have escalated that far anyway.
I mean, if the manager didn't intend for them to be arrested, then why call the police?
Yeah.
Like, that's the question. Like, if you, like, you didn't she, the manager talk to them? Like,
yeah,
I don't know if it's a he or she.
But the police stuff, and I think the police stuff to the manager. And the police came, and she went to the bathroom.
Like, I don't know if it was a bunch of...
He ended up arresting
them. Yeah, like, miscommunication or whatnot, but, like, that's just insane.
Yeah, and then actually, like, now... Just yesterday, the settlement was, they gave them $1 each.
Yes, I remember reading this.
They gave them $1 each, and so I think they donated $200,000 to the foundation.
Yeah. But go for those guys.
Yeah.
$1?
$1.
The two guys got $1.
$2. $1 for him. $1 for him.
But, like, I want to say the article that I read, it was more of, like, their choice.
Yeah.
So, like, go for them to, like, one, like, don't give me the money, let's put it to a better cause. Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, clearly, but, like, even with that, like, that's how you know they're good-hearted people. And just because, like I said before, the color of their skin, it was so easy to jump to conclusions about what they're doing.
So, the company itself, Starbucks, has said they plan to hold a company-wide meeting this week to discuss the next steps and to underperform their long-standing commitment to treating one another with respect to dignity. It's basically, like, you know, went on the whole apology tour.
Yeah.
You know, honestly, I think if it wasn't for the video, they probably wouldn't have said anything.
No.
Honestly, but yeah, that's why social media is an important piece of news.
Yeah, it's like a huge tool. And it's like, it's not overlooked, but I would kind of say it's underrated because most people think of social media as for like socializing with your friends and whatnot, but like, there's such like a bigger picture to it that a lot of people just don't see.
Yeah, like how many,
welcome back to Global Media News. My co-host Amanda Saguna is ready with another story about the impact of social media on our lives. Popular DJ Avicii's tragic death has shaken a lot of people. His fans are using social media to express their grief about this very sad story. Amanda, what happened? And how are social media playing a big role in mourning for the celebrity DJ?
Okay, so most of you, if you know Avicii, who is Tim Berglund, is his real name. He passed away, I'm going to say maybe like 2 weeks ago now. I don't remember the exact date. But at the beginning of it, no one really knew what happened. It was kind of just like, oh, Avicii passed away, like, we're so sorry. And then all of a sudden, you see all social media and Twitter blowing up with, like, Avicii's dead, what are we going to do, like, mourning him. And I was like, wow, like, this is crazy, because not, like, if it was any other person, like, only their family and their friends would know, but, like, he passed away, and then everything blew up, and social media just went crazy. And I was, sat back, and I was like, this is, like, a really good topic to talk about and think about how Twitter helps celebrities and followers and fans just mourn people in, like, a unique way, and, like, just puts a different view on how they impacted everyone's lives.
Yeah, like, I saw, I think it was TMZ who posted, like, the video of him that I think they found out that, like, he committed suicide.
Yes,
he was very unhappy with his life. And I think they said he used, like, glass.
Yes.
Like, or something.
Yeah, he, like, cut his wrist. But before he even, like, this came out, like, this week, they finally released how he passed away. But his parents, like, released a statement saying that, basically, like, hinting that he took his own life, but we're not going to say it yet because we're not ready for people to know. But, like, it was very well known that he had a lot of health issues, and he even stopped performing live. So it kind of, like, I mean, obviously there's no reason for anyone to take their lives, but you could tell, like, he was kind of going down the wrong path, and that's where his life ended up. But after that statement from his family, everyone started speculating, like, oh, I think he took his own life. Like, was it drugs? Like, how did he do it? And then recently they said that he took, like, a glass a piece of glass and like cut his wrists and just let himself go easy, I guess. I mean,
it's super sad. It's just crazy that you could never know like what someone's going through. Like, he was a very big DJ.
Yep. And like, you would think that, oh, he's so famous, like he has nothing to feel sad about, like he has the world at his fingertips, but you never can really understand what's going on in someone's mind unless you know that, or if they want to even share it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I remember at first they were saying it was something like that he died from like alcoholism or something.
Yeah.
And I guess.
Yeah, so like it's like that's an easy conclusion to jump to. Because like you think a DJ raves, drugs, alcohol, but like no, he was just a young adult who just didn't feel happy about what he was doing before then. No one really caught on in time to really help him out, so it's sad.
Yeah, definitely. It's super tragic.
Yeah. And then, Twitter put their, like, whole thing on Moments, and they made, like, a bunch of tweets, and, like, you were able to have, like, live updates as to, like, what we know about his death, like, how it's going, if there's anything when they didn't know, if they've released what his cause of death was. So, like, Twitter really helped you keep it, like, keep up and be in the loop about what really was going on with him. And especially because they didn't release the cause of death, it was like a very recurring topic that like always on your Twitter feed you saw everyone like tweeting about Avicii, like why did he pass away, what's going on. So it was crazy to see that like just through Twitter, like so many people were like reaching out to his family and his friends, and like even him, even though he passed away, it was like kind of like a, it was kind of cool but not in like a weird way, like just to see like everyone like coming together in a sense to show their support and love for someone that they cherished their talents for.
Yeah, I did notice like a lot of like EDM DJs like Diplo like tweeting about like how it was such a huge loss.
Yeah,
that community, so.
And like even artists that he worked with were like tweeting like this is such a loss, and then artists that he didn't even get to work with like you've gone too soon, like I really wanted to work with you. Like he had a big impact on the music industry and like DJing in general. Like he was very well known, and it's like a very sad death to mourn and like realize that he's actually gone, because he was just extremely talented.
How old was he when he
was only 28. Yeah, so he's still like young.
Still very young.
Yeah. Of course. And, he had his whole life ahead of him, and it's like he passed away so early. But then again, like he did stop touring and whatnot, but he was still, I think he was still releasing music, and I'm pretty sure he has songs, but his family's still going to release them, even though he's not with us anymore. So hopefully that's the case, and it's not like he's gone forever. He's still here with his music.
Yeah, that'll be a nice gift for his fans and keep his legacy alive.
Exactly. That's my exact thought. All right, for Global Media News, I'm Amanda. Now back to you, Kristen.
Thanks, Amanda. Blockchain, blockchain, blockchain. Everybody's talking about blockchain this and blockchain that, but do we really know about blockchain?
So, most people are familiar with blockchain because of all the hype about popular digital crypto-type currencies built on this new technology called blockchain. But how much do we really know about this new technological infrastructure to so many financial transactions? What is blockchain? What can it be used for? Is this just a financial accounting technology for currency transactions? Juan Salazar is here with us to give us some blockchain basics so that we can bring to understand the implications of the blockchain revolution. Juan, what first attracted you to this topic?
I didn't know what blockchain was at all. Let's first start off with what is blockchain. Blockchain is a digital ledger in which all information is stored of all transactions and all cryptocurrencies. So this holds all valuable information going from numbers, going from data, going from resources. Since everything is online now, and like everything, it's no more like words of mouth. Blockchain pretty much is the structure to behind Bitcoin and why Bitcoin is doing so much. And since other companies are looking into Bitcoin and seeing the huge success that Bitcoin has made in the last several years, a lot of companies are tapping into also using blockchain. Like some companies are using Bitcoin or blockchain for decentralized internet. So programmers are currently working on decentralized internet platforms to distribute all the functions of the internet over distributed nodes, which will increase the resiliency of the World Wide Web. People are also using it for smart contracts. Smart contracts can be built on top of a ledger and operate as a decentralized application. These programs can have functions which are becoming more sophisticated and may diminish the need for standard legal contracts. So based on these two things I said, you can already see that blockchain is already is the way of the future.
So who has picked up on this blockchain change? Who's doing it?
I could name some conglomerate companies like IBM, Microsoft, Google has started to use it as well.
So what caused blockchain to gain so much transaction?
It all started off with Bitcoin. I don't know if you guys know what Bitcoin is, but it's been really booming in the last 2 years. It's Bitcoin is a financial cryptocurrency. I'll call it safe, but it's more like a data mining, because people use it to gain funds and invest stocks and gain value out of it. So this is what blockchain is. This is what blockchain holds. It's Bitcoin, so it's the main structure for Bitcoin. And people are looking at the success of Bitcoin and starting to dive into it.
What exactly is a cryptocurrency? I don't know if it's just me that doesn't know, but...
Alright, so cryptocurrency is online money. It's like virtual money. It's not like paper money. It's currency online.
Yeah.
And you use it to buy transactions. You can use it to buy different things. And it's... People use it because no one is paper. People are paperless. It's the way of the future.
Saving trees every day.
So how do I get some?
How do you get into Bitcoin? Well, it's very simple. You can download Bitcoin on your phone, literally right now. Make an account and start investing. You have the funds. You don't even need that much.
So it's like investments, like
yeah.
Oh, okay. So like that's pretty cool. Virtual money.
Yeah. Like Bitcoin this year is really booming. But if you had Bitcoin, let's say about 3 or 4 years ago, and you have it now, you're like technically rich.
I wish I would have known about this. I need money. Isn't Bitcoin dead?
Bitcoin is not dead. Bitcoin has made a lot of other companies to make up their own coins, like Lemon coins, Litecoins. A lot of coins are coming out because just of how much Bitcoin popularity and how much Bitcoin traction has started in the last couple of years.
So it kind of like started off slow, then it was a big hit, now everyone's copying them.
Yeah.
People are just so unoriginal nowadays.
Do you have Bitcoin yourself?
So, like, what can you invest in? Like, do you know, like, how? Say, if I was a person and I wanted to do Bitcoin, how can I get started?
Like I said, you download the app, right?
Okay.
And you put your. One thing about it is that you have to put. And you don't like. Some people don't really care because. Nothing has been done, like nothing with identity fraud or stuff like that. But you put your information, the information goes to SD, so it's right, like it's a security number, stuff like that, because it's your money, so the company wants to like figure that you got your money. And they have done a good job of protecting people's identity and stuff like that. But yeah, you download the app, you invest how much money you want to put. And from there, depends on how the point of value rises or drops, that's how you get your money.
Is there a minimum, a maximum that you have to invest, or is it like a dollar?
You can start as low as $2. The broom, maybe it'll bounce out of there back to you.
Thanks, Juan. Our wrestling reporter is here. Noah Miranda is on the social media and wrestling beat for us at Global Media News. He's reporting about indie wrestlers today. Some of the stars of indie wrestlers are using social media to create storylines to attract and engage fans as they build their personal brands as wrestling celebrities. No. What is an indie wrestler?
Well, most wrestlers you've probably heard of have been an indie wrestler at one point. Like even John Cena. I had fun with John Cena's wrestling on smaller shows. Before they pulled him up to main television, he wrestled a brand called AEW Ohio Valley Wrestling. We kind of developed his character that became like if you look at today's roster, WWE superstars, you're going to see a lot of names like Sami Zayn, Kevin Owens, AJ Styles, Shinsuke Nakamura, all these guys who spent a lot of time on the indies kind of developing their skills before coming to the WWE. So they've been kind of snatching up a lot of indie talent and kind of putting them onto NXT so they can develop more of the WWE stuff. That's not what I'm here to talk about. A lot of indie wrestlers have proven that they can develop their own brand and make a lot of money without WWE having to sign with WWE. In particular, there's a group called the Bullet Club. I've actually seen Bullet Club t-shirts on campus several times, so it's not like some small thing anymore. They've gone worldwide at this point. The stars of the Bullet Club are, in particular, wrestlers named Kenny Omega, the Young Bucks, who are Matt and Nick Jackson twins, actually. Almost twins. One of them has side bones. Hangman Page, Cody Rhodes, who is also son of Dusty Rhodes, who's a legendary wrestler in the 80s and 70s, and a booker as well. And they kind of came together. They're the current incarnation of Bullet Club. Bullet Club's been around since 2012. But recently, they took to the internet and started producing their own YouTube series, where they produce their travels on the road, because indie wrestling is crazy. They call themselves carnies sometimes, because they travel around the world and small shows. These guys have kind of evolved up, moved up. They wrestle for New Japan Pro Wrestling, which is the top promotion in Japan currently. They wrestle for Ring of Honor, which is pretty much the biggest indie federation currently. And they also used to wrestle for people like CZW, which is Combat Zone Wrestling, which is kind of the new incarnation of ECW. They do extreme wrestling. But they've kind of, they've used this YouTube channel to push their own merchandise. They've used it to connect with fans on a whole other level. Like, all this stuff backstage kind of makes them feel more human, because a lot of the time they're these larger-than-life characters that they're portraying. Like, all these cartoonish villainous things they would do on television, it kind of creates that weird disconnect. But being healthy, which is what they call it, they have a little subsection shows, like, the real lives.
I feel like wrestling, there's more to it than just actually wrestling with someone, and it's so overlooked, because I remember when I was little and I used to watch wrestling, and I thought it was really cool, because, like, not only, I was a little tomboy, so you get to see people beat each other up, so it's kind of cool, but, like, there's, like, a story behind it and more to it, and it's so overlooked, and it's just something that, like, a lot of people just think wrestling, like, okay, this is boring, but, like, they actually do put on a show, and there's, like, a script and reason behind why people have rivalries and all that stuff, so it's actually pretty cool. Would you consider indie wrestling kind of like a stepping stone for people that want to make it big?
Yeah, I'd argue it can be a stepping stone. A lot of the time for a lot of wrestlers, the stepping stones. But I was going to get into this, but the Young Bucks, in particular, they've kind of created their own brand outside of the WWE, which is so successful. Because they would be making less money than they would on the Indies. So they've become world-renowned wrestlers, and they're known for their skills in the ring. They're not just known for like their cartoon antics. They have actual merits as some of the best tag team wrestlers in the world. And they've even gotten sued by the WWE, that I should mention.
Yeah.
If you've ever heard of the Generation X, it's Triple H and Shawn Michaels, they kind of do this shopping. And the Young Bucks have picked it up, and they started doing it in the ring, and then they got issued a cease and desist from the WWE, and they were like, oh, okay, and then they put the cease and desist in the shirts.
That's all this smart, using your own troubles to brand yourself even more.
Yeah, they're funny. They know exactly what they're doing, and they're young too. They have a lot more time. They're only 31.
Oh, wow.
These guys. And like a lot, like Cody Rhodes, when he got dumped by the WWE, he was kind of in a weird spot. They were misusing him. He had this whole gimmick where he would dress up in a big latex suit and call himself Stardust.
Okay, all right.
And he had a painted face. As you probably figure out, he hated this. And once he got out of the WWE, he wasn't shy about saying it. And he kind of went on. Like, he completely cut loose his filter. There's an old WCW. Criticizing wrestlers because they typically put it all on the line. They go all out. It can be a little bit injury prone at times. So he criticized them for that, for not knowing how to work. And Cody said, and Cody pretty much went off. So I can read the tweets from you now. I'll sum it up. He basically told them, you were never over in the crowd. You were never over backstage. You had no point whatsoever. You're not a good wrestler. Shouldn't stop talking about things you know nothing about.
Shots fired.
Yeah, no, he didn't want that. He didn't want any coaches. And it kind of helped develop his character further because he's supposed to be the main villain. He's currently the new leader, I believe to be the new leader. They decided this at the most recent Ring of Honor pay per view where him and Kenny Omega had a battle for the leadership. And what ended up happening is the Bucks, the Young Bucks, super kicked Kenny Omega right in the gym. So he became the new leader of the world right now. And it's all leading up to a 10-man tag match with one half of the Bullet Club, who's on Kenny's side, and one half is on Cody's side. Cody's side includes Marty Scurll, the Young Bucks, and Hangman Page. And Kenny has Tamatanga, Tangaloa, Bad Luck Fale, and Chase Owens, who are all huge band stars. And it's developed a lot of fan. Worked up a lot of fan interest in this because this is something they hadn't like really seen before, and it helps a lot since it's hard to kind of watch New Japan as an American because like one, their pay per views are on at like pretty ludicrous times. Like I remember being up until like well into the morning watching the New Japan Pro Wrestling pay per view, but these YouTube videos kind of eliminate that time problem. Watch them anytime.
Yeah, it's definitely helping it become more like popular here in the States too.
Oh yeah, the finale video for Being the Elite series got around 315,000 views, which is pretty good for indie wrestling. And, like if you look at the WWE YouTube channel, they pull in millions of views. So look at that, it's still so small. It's actually done wonders for their careers. Look back at it, and you start to get that interest. And you're like, oh, they're making their own pay-per-view too. So you go out, you buy the pay-per-view, slowly get more invested to the point where you follow it. Like, why not?
So, for our listeners, if they want to watch these pay-per-views, how much do they usually cost around?
Like, there's something called, I believe it's called Swift TV. I'm not going to really look at it, because I stream it. it's like, I think it's either $9.99 a month or $19.99 a month, or you get access to a lot of TV channels and stuff. If it is $19.99 a month, it's more expensive than WWE Network currently is, which I guess is a money thing, but if you're like a diver, you probably throw social media bucks as well. So that's about it. The big pay-per-view is coming out on September 1st, so if anybody wants to watch that, they have all 100 episodes for free on YouTube. And there's a lot of ways you can get into this stuff. They even have some matches on local TV. For Global Media News, I'm Noah Mondo.
Thanks, Noah. Let's leave the wrestling ring and head over to the art gallery for a discussion of how new media is creating new art. How are the new media shaking up the art world? Welcome back to Global Media News. I'm Kristen Schmaling. Jay Shah is covering how the world of creativity is being transformed by new media technologies. Jay, what makes an artist a new media artist? And do you have a favorite artist that you could give us an example of an artist working in new media today?
So before I answer that question, I want to congratulate everybody for last night's MAP Awards. If you guys noticed, there was a digital arts section as well as a new media section.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. So, have you guys been to a museum in the last, I don't know, 5 months, 6 months, last year?
I know I haven't, but I've been to a museum before.
Been to a museum before. So, we started out with beginning of art where, you know, sculpting wasn't still, discovered. You know, we started with canvas, we started with natural paints, and then oil.
Yeah, like all the basics.
Yeah, all the basics, like all the get your hands dirty stuff. And now, all of art has evolved into this digitalized format where you don't have just paper, pen, and pencil, and you know, stone. You have technology that's incorporated into all these art forms. So, to answer your question about what is new media art, according to Widewalls, new media can be defined as any content available on demand through the internet, accessible on any digital device, usually containing interactive user feedback and creative participation. Now, art itself doesn't have a definition because it relies so much on emotional expression, on artistic expression. It's a form, it's a language, it's a form of expression for the individual. And it usually depicts the artist's emotion, but also it could be left to the interpretation of the viewer. So 2 years ago, here at City Hall Westbury at the gallery, there was an installation by Harry Lee. It was all wooden sculptures, and all of them were entitled. None of them had a name. So that was, for me, that was the first time that something art-related was entitled, because usually they are titled.
Yeah, like a meaningful meaning.
Right, to help the person understand it better. So this artist, he wanted them to remain untitled and let the viewer interpret what it looks like. So that was also interactive in itself, because you're looking at the sculpture, you're looking at the piece, you know, you get to touch it. You don't have to touch it. So now we have digital art. And this year, there's a prize equivalent to the Pulitzer Prize called the Turner Prize. And the shortlist consists of a majority of media art. So it's all interactive. It's still interactive, but most of it is photographs. Most of it incorporates smartphones. Smartphones have become so popular. And it's interesting to note that they've taken over our generation so much. So one thing to also note is that lately art has evolved into becoming more of a statement. It has become more involved with social causes, with politics, and interestingly, this year's Turner Prize shortlist has a majority of people depicting migration and police shootings. So I think that's interesting. I am kind of sad that people are not as, excited about just, you know, traditional art, which is paper, paint, whatever. So it's kind of sad. It's a catch-22. It's sad, but it's also cool to see all of these different art pieces with glow lights and glow-in-the-dark paint and wires and all of that stuff. And, like, you can push a button and there's sound and there's an audiovisual element and stuff. What do you guys think?
I think it, like, digital art now, it like, kind of puts you in a position where you're not just looking at it. It can kind of put you in it, like what you were saying before. You can click a button and lights will go on and you hear music. So not only are you looking at that piece of artwork, but you're kind of a part of it. So I think that's what makes it really cool. But then again, there's also this kind of authenticity behind, like, original artwork, where doing digital animation, you're not going to be able to get, like, that hands-on, like, I did this with my hands and I created this myself. But I guess it has, like, its strong points and its weak points, but overall, I just hope that people don't stop creating original artwork just because of the new technologies that allow you to do digital animation and digital art.
Well, you made a comment earlier about how original people are nowadays. And you're saying that you know, art it helps the person be a part of it. So you don't necessarily need a smartphone to be part of the piece, be a part of it.
Yeah.
Even if it was just a canvas with a painting, you know, you could still use your own imagination and be part of it. You could, you know, I don't know, sit in front of it for hours and lose yourself. But I don't know. I'm just an elitist for original or traditional artworks. So
yeah,
that's just me.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. For Global Media News, I'm Jay Shah. Back to you, Kristen.
Thanks, Jay. Let's talk about Facebook Messenger and augmented reality. Asha Foster has a report for us about how augmented reality is being used to sell in Messenger. What does an augmented reality marketing campaign look like? Asha, can you describe one of these campaigns and what would we see on Messenger?
Okay, so according to an article that I read on Mashable, they said that a bunch of brands will be basically integrating augmented reality effects into their automated messaging bots. So basically, I think this kind of came from it's mimicking Snapchat that recently launched shoppable lenses. I don't know about you guys, but I did notice that there are like a lot more advertisements on Snapchat now. And they also said that brands and businesses, they're basically creating these augmented reality experiences to get you to buy things. So for instance, like on Sephora.com, you can literally like try on the makeup. I do know that there was this company that offered to, like, basically they wanted me to like post their glasses and do a review. So they were going to send me glasses for free. And I was like, oh my gosh, I don't know what glass I want to choose because like I can't try them on in person. But then they had this feature on there where you can literally upload a picture of yourself and put them on that way. So because you are actually trying them on, it makes it feel like more real, you know, to you.
Yeah, which kind of intimate.
Yeah, which like enhances the experience. So by utilizing like Facebook camera effects platform, like I guess that's what they call it. That's what they're going to use to integrate this sort of thing. So they said that simply by opening up the camera on your phone, the filters of the augmented reality will appear, and essentially the brands want the users to share their shopping experiences with their friends, their family, via Messenger, because that way they're going to get more people to buy whatever their friends or family are interested in. And then also, according to an article on TechRadar, Facebook states that there are over 300,000 active bots on Messenger and 8 billion messages shared between people and businesses every month. So obviously, naturally, with those statistics, they're going to say, okay, how can we continue to keep this growing? This is something that they see long-term revenue in, implementing something like this. I do know that, for instance, Nike also has a feature where you can kind of try on the shoe before you, you know, purchase, and you can see what it looks like. And I honestly feel like it just creates more of a relatability. You feel like if you see a product being tried on, you know, or you see someone else using something that you want to buy, you're more likely to buy it that way. So I just thought it was a really interesting article. And they said that there are 4 businesses now that are going, because this has honestly always kind of existed, but now it's being implemented like way, way more. It's being mainstream now, I would say. So they said that this company called Oztech Computer Inc., Kia Motors Corp., Nike, and of course, like Sephora, Moet, Hennessy, and Louis Vuitton are going to be the major companies that are going to be implementing this.
So how does Facebook kind of get all the loop and Messenger and stuff?
So basically, because people are always messaging their friends and family about whatever products they're buying, I guess. I personally don't do that, though.
Yeah, I don't either.
I don't use Facebook.
Yeah.
But according to their statistics, that's what they're saying that people do. And I think that, you know how people track your cookies?
Yeah.
And so when you are searching something up, and you happen to be on Facebook, maybe if you see an ad for it, maybe subconsciously you click on that, and then you're like, oh my god, I was just looking at that. Oh, let me just send this to my friend. Oh my god, see, this is the thing I was talking about.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? I guess it kind of works that way. So I think that's kind of how Facebook gets tied into it.
Yeah, I mean, we were talking about this before with Kristen's topic, and it's just crazy how everything comes together through the internet and Facebook.
Absolutely, and basically, it's going to make it possible, like, all of this is going to make it possible for the customer to test drive the products in real time, which creates that relatability. So, from Global Media News, I'm Aisha. Back to you guys.
Thanks, Aisha, and thanks to Amanda Seguna for hosting with me this week. Many, many thanks to Nikita Hines-Lundy and Ricardo Morales for producing our show all semester.
And many thanks to our engineers, Joe Fryman and Jay Setshaw. Today, we heard reports from Asha Foster, Noel Miranda, Elijah Petway, Juan Salazar, Kristen Schmeling, and myself, Amanda Seguna, Jay Shaw, and Scarlett Vizcaino-Perez.
Global Media News is brought to you by OWWR Old Westbury Web Radio and the Media and Communications Department here at the State University of New York College at Old Westbury.
For more media news and resources, check out our latest posts on the Catalyst at oldwestburycatalyst.org, where you can listen to all of our webcasts and even subscribe to our podcast feed, which you all should.
Follow us on Twitter at OWWRGMN. Use our Twitter feed to keep up with the latest news for aspiring journalists and media professionals.